Company Casebook with Linda Lewis. Fascinating firms, exciting entrepreneurs, the human side of business.
Hello and welcome to Company Casebook with me, Linda Lewis. This is the Share Radio show where we go behind the scenes at businesses big and small and hear the human stories behind the spreadsheets and the strategy. Now, every great business starts with an idea. But one idea isn't enough. You have to keep coming up with more and more of them. And the tech company we're profiling today is all about ideas, or everyday innovation, as they describe it. They're called Wizoku, that's a Swahili word, by the way, and they help big companies like Waitrose, Aviva and Avis come up with new ways of working by generating ideas from staff, customers and partners. They operate from Bristol and West London, where two of the team were busy brainstorming when Share Radio dropped in.
You could use the theme piloting, testing, you know, beta customers. And everyday innovation is about BAU. It's not about something over here or something in the future. It may take some time. Innovation should become BAU.
I'm Simon Hill, and I'm the CEO of Wizoku. Wizoku is a business-to-business software company operating in the innovation management space, which may not be a space that's super familiar to people, but effectively what we bring to organizations is a specialist software solution that enables them to open the innovation conversation up to everybody in their network, whether that's for large companies to engage employees and customers, or for smaller businesses to start to reach out to partners, suppliers, or their wider customer base as well, to bring them into the innovation discussion around new products, new services, or the way that they work as well.
And what was it that gave you the idea for it?
It's a mixture of different things, really. So my background was, before I started this company, was I was a strategy consultant. So I worked for Deloitte and PricewaterhouseCoopers. And there were two things in that, really. One was I was one of those people that was a relatively small cog in a very big machine that had lots of great ideas, but was never really sure where to take them to. So lots of good ideas about how I thought the business could be run better, how we could better serve clients, but really there was no place and no home for those different things, and that led to frustration, and ultimately I was probably a part of the reason why I left the companies that I worked for. On the other side, I got involved with a very early stage technology company called Huddle. I was one of the sort of early founding team there and got a bit of a bug for early stage technology and being a bit of a disruptor and coming in and changing things. And so I saw a really big opportunity in the market for building something that made innovation collaborative, opened up that opportunity to everybody to have a voice, and would solve the problem that I'd had back in the day as a fairly junior consultant with having no home and no place to take those ideas to.
And the name was Wizoku?
So why do we have a strange name like Wizoku?
That's probably what I should have asked.
So there's two big reasons for this. One was we really wanted to own a .com, and actually trying to get anything with innovation or idea in there, which is what we do, is impossible.
Absolutely, because everybody's always thought of it before.
Yeah, well, actually in this case, mostly it's domain squatters that are just sitting on that domain and want lots of money for not much, quite honestly. And so principled me said no way. But the nice bit behind this, Wizoku means great idea in Swahili. Swahili, obviously, slightly random. We don't really have much of a connection into Africa. But actually, at the time I was starting this company, my wife was just launching a business in Tanzania. And so she was living in Dar es Salaam at the time, and hence the sort of Swahili genesis or the Swahili meaning behind the business name.
Oh, so there is an African connection.
There is loosely an African connection, yeah. My Swedish wife was launching a business down in Dar es Salaam at the time that we were there. So yeah, absolutely.
So, Simon, the software that you developed, what does it actually do?
The challenges that our customers face are pretty complicated, but actually what we're trying to help them to do is to try and distill the innovation that they're trying to achieve and the journey to become innovators and boil it all the way back to the actual business problems that they want to address through their innovation. So for some of our clients, take Waitrose as an example, innovation to them on the whole is about giving everybody who works for the John Lewis Group, for Waitrose, a voice around innovation at quite an incremental level. So if you're out there and you are stacking shelves, you're serving customers at the tills, you have many ideas on a daily basis about how you could improve the customer life, how you could improve your working life at Waitrose. it's quite difficult to engage those people because they don't have, you know, they're lucky, they don't sit behind a computer all day. They're doing real manual work and they're serving people. So we've given Waitrose a single platform that, no, whenever you have an idea, if you see something really simple of just about how to make sure that something isn't out of stock for too long, so the customer can't buy it, Waitrose can't sell it, nobody's happy, then let's fix those problems quickly. A simple place that's accessible on your mobile that you take that idea to, knowing that it's not a dumb suggestion box that's going to fall into a black hole and nothing will happen to it, but actually has a strict process behind it. And so we work with clients to give them the toolkits that will help them to, first of all, frame the challenges that they're facing, the calls for ideas. Set the exam statement. So what is it that happens when you come to respond to that challenge? What questions are we asking from you? So you don't end up with just vague, wishy-washy ideas, but actually a slightly more structured idea around, I think it would be better if we did this, this, and this, because the customer would benefit because of X, Y, or Z. And then help them to build the process so that at the end of it, we can give quick, transparent, simple feedback to the people that are coming up with these ideas. Whether they're really small things, Waitrose has ideas around just reducing the length of the till roll so that they can save hundreds of thousands of pounds and save the planet a little bit because they don't need all that information on there, through to bigger ideas like giving free coffee to my Waitrose card members. All of them have come through employee ideas that have been taken into the business and driven real value. Having a home and a process for that means that ideas can flow in quickly, and then can find the right home in the business for the person that can say yes or no quickly and transparently give feedback so that you then recognise the person or the team of people that had that idea is at the heart and soul of it what we do.
But in the old days, when companies had suggestion boxes, staff could put suggestions in the suggestion boxes, scribble on a bit of paper and do it anonymously if they wanted to. What you're talking about is something that is computerised, and presumably it also removes that element of anonymity. So is progress necessarily a good thing?
Good question. I think in my case, what we're really talking about is innovation being a cultural asset to the organisation. Anyone that's had a new business idea, we sit and have them in the pub all the time, knows that some ideas will go somewhere. If you find a champion to come and say, actually, that is a brilliant idea, Simon, you should do something with, you're infinitely more likely to do that. And you find another person to support it. And that ability to co-create good ideas is really what we're bringing. So you can find a little champion who can take your acorn of an idea and turn it into something that hopefully drives millions of dollars worth of value or new businesses or new somethings for the organisation.
I'm Nicola Dark. I'm Director of Customer Success at Wizoku. So really, everyday innovation is about making innovation part of every person's day job within your organisation. So it becomes part of the fabric and the lifeblood of an organisation. It's not kind of seen as a dark art or an add-on going on in a back room somewhere. And many organisations have innovation labs and innovation departments, and that's perfectly fine, as you should. But everyday innovation is also about putting it out there more broadly to the wider workforce, getting them engaged in helping the organisation become more insightful, more connected, and more adaptable by kind of tapping into that front-end knowledge that you'll have amongst your employees or your partners or your customers.
So what have you been able to do working with, say, Waitrose?
Waitrose have started to use kind of this methodology and the platform to really manage the bulk of their process improvement on shop floor. So anybody that works on Waitrose is able to go and submit an idea to say where they think something can be improved, or that they've seen a flaw in a process or wasted hours or whatever it might be. And then it gets kind of processed by the correct team to ensure that they're evaluating the impact it's going to have on the wider business, and then they can implement that across all the stores. So for them, it's about efficiency business-wide, how they can roll out small changes on a wider level. So that kind of incremental level of change, that continuous improvement piece, are the small tweaks, but overall kind of add up to vast amounts. And Waitrose have been doing this, I think, for a couple of years now, and are racking up considerably on the benefits. So it's great for them.
What about the British Museum? You've been working with them.
Absolutely. So the British Museum have kind of taken a two-pronged approach at this. So one, absolutely, they would like to loop in their staff and employees to help improve how the library works. So they're looking to complete a new digital reading room. And they were asking for submissions on what that might look like, how it would be used, what people would find of value, so that they can start to scope out and even sense check their own hypothesis on what they would like to do and make sure that it's really driven by those people who are going to use it. We work closely with University of Oxford. One of the staff put in an idea about when you go around and visit a museum, locally to Oxford, it's the Ashmolean, you're looking at items on display, but it's quite one-dimensional. You see it and you read, but it doesn't really bring it to life. So they created an app where it registers which kind of item you're looking at in the museum, and then it allows you, for example, if it's a musical instrument, to kind of to push a button and kind of mimic playing it so you can hear it. And then they had some amazing different ideas from students around different ways of building their course, sharing knowledge with each other. Obviously, you've got lots of different brains with different expertise in Oxford and how they can kind of help coach each other and different kind of modules of what they're studying.
What about Aviva? You've been working with them too in the insurance front.
Yeah, absolutely. So Aviva is another really good example of how they started to embed everyday innovation, but on a slightly different end of the scale. So they run it as a competition, but they run what we call a challenge around how they can improve their business offering by keeping the customer at the heart of what they do. And they've done an amazing internal branding piece to make a huge song and dance about this so that every employee knows the customer is at the heart of their business and that they, as a business, need to innovate for their customer. And they've had some amazing ideas which have produced new partnerships for them, which have produced new ways of engaging with the customer, improvements to their offering. And that's still going strong.
At the end of the day, though, they are businesses. So are you able to prove to them that your approach actually benefits the bottom line?
Absolutely. I mean, something like process improvement, where you need to change how you engage with your customer, where you might need to change your shop floor process, such as Waitrose, it's quite easy for them to kind of track value. And I think Waitrose is up to the 3.2 million now in terms of the bottom line savings they've made on revenue and time for employees.
You're listening to Company Casebook. Stay with us for more on Wazoku after this.
Company Casebook with Linda Lewis. Fascinating firms, exciting entrepreneurs, the human side of business.
Welcome back to Company Casebook with me, Linda Lewis, and Wazoku, where their new website has just gone live.
So Ava, the new website's looking good.
Yeah, so we just want to set up a page where we can have all of our reports and easy access for everybody to kind of take a look at the information that we have to offer in regards to everyday innovation and kind of our different pieces of the series.
Makes a lot of sense. Have a look at the product page.
Yeah.
Cool. I think this is looking good, actually. There's a nice video on there just explaining a little bit more about what we do. Yeah. And then digging down into some of the benefits as well. So I think this is fantastic. Yeah, just play that for me. So nice product video, actually. This is something we've been working on. Gives an overview of the homepage, where people can feature the different innovation challenges that they are looking to run into their different stakeholder groups. People can then choose which of those challenges they've got ideas relevant to, click in, and a quick call to action that asks you, what is your idea? And makes it very simple for you to put that in. Once you've done so, we'll show you your idea, and also you can suddenly see everybody else's ideas that have already participated in this, so that if you've got an opinion on another idea, you can click into that, start collaborating around that idea as well, commenting, voting, even potentially joining the team. Jump into that. And then to help people make those decisions about which ideas should go forward, we have evaluation tools that can then come in and let you vote on them, and deeper analytics as well that start to gamify this process, so that we can see who's winning awards, who's winning badges, who's got certain profile as the top innovators, and what ideas are trending at the moment as well. So lots of richness. Great video, actually. I think it looks really good.
Were you responsible for the video?
I was responsible for the website as a whole, but the video is really a kind of team effort.
I'm Rosemary Dignan. I'm the Chief Strategy and Product Officer. So my responsibility is everything from product development, product strategy, product development, the development team reports to me, through to marketing strategy, and how we market our products to and services to our customers. And so the marketing team reports to me as well.
How long have you been in the UK, out of interest?
Almost 4.5 years. I'm actually an EU citizen. I'm a citizen of Ireland. So I was deciding to move between Ireland, Dublin, or London. And I decided to come over for a couple of weeks and check out what was happening. And I met Simon and we hit it off. And he was at that point, the company was a little over a year old, but it was at a kind of a crossroads and he was looking for somebody to help him build the business. And so we met, we hit it off. And 2 weeks later, I moved here.
Presumably, you have to make sure that you implement innovation within your own business.
Yes, it's really important. As we like to say, we like to eat our own dog food. By using our platform, by engaging in innovation internally, it makes us better able to improve the platform for our customers. So it's really important that we do that. We have the Innovation Pulse, which is our complementary product, which is, it's an assessment tool. It lets organizations know and understand where their innovation capabilities currently exist.
So how does Wazoku actually make money? What is your business model, Rosemary?
So our business model is to sell our software as a service. So rather than somebody buying our software and installing it on their own servers, we host the software for them and they access it via the cloud. We have a subscription model. So basically companies purchase our software for typically 2 to 5 years with an annual subscription. So they pay once a year and they get access it for 12 months. And then that is a recurring model for us.
And the longer they sign up for, the cheaper it gets, presumably? It's a reducing amount?
Yes. So we give discounts for longevity because we think it's really important for organizations to embrace the culture change that goes with this. And therefore, we want to encourage them to use it for multiple years. So we give discounts for longevity. And we also have a bit of a tiered model. So the more people that are involved, it's cheaper per person as well.
Now, Simon, earlier you were talking about how you felt you'd been in the right place at the right time, business-wise. But actually, talking of places, we'd better talk about where we are. West London, North Acton, the perfume factory, an interesting place to have half your business based.
Some of this is founder's prerogative. I live in West London, and so I wasn't hugely keen on a big jolly every day across London to East London. But I kind of like being slightly different. You know, we're a B2B business. Lots of my clients are in central London, but they're all over the world. And so it's an interesting place you find that we're in, right? The perfume factory has an interesting history.
It really was a perfume factory.
It was a perfume factory. Elvis Costello worked here. There was lots around here. There used to be a big MOD base up the road. The BBC used to be around here. And it's actually, you know, we're unfortunately going to have to move towards the middle part of this year because it's all going to be redeveloped and it's itself becoming a bit of a space of newfound beginnings and innovation as this becomes the first stop out of London for High Speed Rail 2 and lots of new stuff therefore springing up around it.
Oh, right. So they're actually going to be building a new station here, aren't they?
Building a new station. Imperial College, I think, has taken a lot of the land around here, so there's lots of new stuff popping up for the students and it's going to be a very different place, I think, in a little while, but it's been a nice home for the last few years for us.
And of course, you also have a second set of offices down in Bristol, don't you?
We do, yeah. So I took the decision a year and a bit ago to move my development office down to Bristol. It was getting very difficult in London to get affordable developers, but not just about cost really, about people looking to come and be part of the cultural fabric of what you're doing. It's a bit more difficult. People tend to be a bit more transient in London than they do elsewhere. So I've got a brilliant office down in Bristol where most of my development team sit, and that's about 10 people now. It's been grown, it grew from nothing a year and a bit ago. And then the majority of the company in London, in North Acton.
Should we just head inside? You don't find it a problem then, having half the team in Bristol and half the team in London?
It's a different setup as a business. I think as a small company, we invest very heavily in the culture and making sure that we do feel like one team. You inevitably do get a subculture that forms. But actually, of all the places I've worked, I'm really, really pleased to say that as a business, we work cross-functionally, the developers get on really, really well. We come together very regularly as a company, mm-hmm, to do joint events. We do biannually we do hackathons that are cross-functional things and get everyone working together as a business. And so actually, for me, no, I think it's actually been a big benefit for us rather than anything else, but it was a bit of a risk.
So how many staff have you actually got?
We have about 40-odd people. It's a big open plan office. I've got the marketing team and the alliances team and my customer success team, who are the guys that are getting into the clients that we're working with and really making sure that we drive success from all of the things that we've gone and sold into to the customers that we work. My sales team here, you can see the sales gong celebrating when we get meetings and sales. So every meeting we get, the sales gong will gong. And that will signal to the office that we have a new meeting booked. And whenever we close a deal, we have a vuvuzela at the end that I brought back from one of my trips to South Africa, and we blow the vuvuzela whenever we close a deal.
Really?
Yeah.
You wouldn't like to give us a quick demo, would you?
Jack, you're really good at blowing the vuvuzela.
Oh, we've got to hear this. This is the first office I've ever been into that's got one of these.
I'll blow it.
It's beautiful. It's in the colours of the South African flag.
So I brought this back from... So I have a partner down in South Africa and actually worked with a client called PPC Cement down there as well. So when I was down there, they gave me a couple of things and I brought back this. It was just after the time of the World Cup, I think, being in South Africa. So picked this thing up and brought it back as a... I'm not sure all the team love the blowing this vuvuzela because it's not the easiest thing in the world to blow, but I can give it a go for you.
Oh,
it
may sound... Yes, go on, Simon, go on.
I didn't close anything. Nothing closed.
That was just a test. So you've been going now about 6 years, Simon, since you first had the idea, and the business has been growing in a very healthy fashion, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We've grown about 60% year on year, every single year since we started, obviously from a zero base. So the idea really is for us to continue to grow our global footprint. You know, we have clients in about 19 markets around the world, and we have huge ambitions for this company. We've done great things, but there's a lot more that we can do. We've recently closed a funding round, which is we funded the business through private money. So in my previous company, we did a lot through venture capital. This time we decided to keep this open to angel investors. But also in this recent round, we've raised a little bit of debt, which is somewhat unusual for a business of our stage. And we're one of the early adopters of a new debt function that's coming out of Barclays. That's a venture debt vehicle, which is nice for us. It gives us a bit of non-dilutive capital to push really hard on our global expansion as a business. You know, we've got a pretty strong UK footprint. We want to grow our European footprint very much so through both direct sales and the partners that we work with, and also continue to grow our North American footprint as well.
Are you able to say how much money you've raised?
So this, as a business in its entirety, we've raised about £3.5 million, and in this last raise, about £2.3 million. So a big chunk of what we've raised historically is coming in this round, and a lot of growth to come out of that as well.
And the debt mechanism that you were talking about, with interest rates so low, I guess that it makes sense, doesn't it?
I think it makes sense. You know, we're also benefiting slightly from the EU. He says with a slight smile on his face. Because the EU Innovation Fund is enabling some of the banks to come to market with an offering that's got, you know, an innovation underwriting from the EU as well. So, you know, that for me is fantastic. It lets us access money that we wouldn't have been able to do. It's still it's got a decent rate tied to it, but it's nothing compared to what you might expect from debt historically. I wrote a paper last June that said, you know, I think we're missing the trick on the level of innovation that is funded by the EU, and there's a big risk out of that. But hopefully this is a sign that there is still lots of capital will flow between countries and keep businesses like us thriving and driving innovation, but also the guys that we work with and sell to as well.
And that was Simon Hill of Wazoku, looking forward presumably to ever more soundings of that vuvuzela in their office as the business continues to grow. Time to sound our closing bell. Join us again next week on Company Casebook. But for now, from me, Linda Lewis, it's goodbye and good business.